At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome to Knife Talk. The three of us are here. Marco Polo has found his way back. Myself, Craig Lockett of Chop Knives, Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts, and Jeff Fader of Fader Knives. He's back. He's been travelling the world the last few months. But yeah, he's back from Sweden. We got a full house. We got no questions to answer because apparently, myself and Mareko blew through them all last week. But we'll see how we get on. Mareko, how are you?
I'm doing good. Just coming off a business meeting again. Like I said, I do my business meeting on Thursdays with my wife, and I'm just excited, man. The end of the year is coming up, and there's some last few fun events happening. Actually, this weekend, a bunch of knife makers are coming into town, into my local area, because Dave Lish, who is a master bladesmith for the ABS, he's putting on a show out in Yelm, Washington, which is about 30 minutes from me. And it's in the fucking sticks. So how he got these makers there, I don't know. But there's going to be a lot of great people there. Jane Siminski's going to be there. There's going to be all kinds of great guys, makers that I haven't seen. I only get to see maybe once a year at Blade Show. So I'm super psyched to see. Joshua Prince is going to be there. Gabe Fletcher is going to be there. Bill Burke. Just a bunch of very talented, cool people. Francesca Ricci. Teton Leather is going to be there. Fucking, it's going to be a party. Will Stelter. It's going to be a party.
Wow.
It's going to be fun. It's cool. I'm just excited because it's like everybody's coming to my house except for I don't have to host the party.
So it's going to be super fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
It's exactly it. I'm trying to think what else. We got some, what is it? The class. I'm going to be, so right after Maker Camp is another thing I'm excited about, is like a fucking month out. So if people haven't already got their tickets, go to Maker Camp, the Catskill Mountain Maker Camp. You can get your tickets, information, whatever you need. You can get it all there. I'm excited. I got my schedule dialed in for Maker Camp. It's going to be all mathematics themed, which I know everybody absolutely loves. But it's all about material management and trying to just like get the most efficiency out of the material, especially when you're going to take the time to make Damascus and stuff like that. It kind of becomes a precious commodity. You're spending all this time making it something cool and fancy and interesting. So I'm trying to help people figure out how to economize their material, how to not let it go to waste, how to get it to present how they want. So some of the classes, I'm going to do a pattern welded walkthrough. And then I'm going to do a Damascus or blade math and then go through my forging progression. And then I'm also going to talk about tile welding and pattern expansion, which is actually something I don't really hear a lot about. It's one of the aspects of Damascus making is mosaics, and people cut off all these little tiny tiles. But trying to figure out how far those patterns are going to expand in the forge welding and the drawing out of the bars and all that stuff can be kind of tricky. And some of the patterns don't necessarily show up very well. So this is about helping people try to figure that aspect out, so it does show up the way you want it to present in your final piece. And then right after Maker Camp, I'm going to Rhode Island. We're locking in a location still, but I'm going to be teaching a 2-day class, which is my Decoding Mosaic Damascus class, which is a seminar. So it's not a traditional make and take. It's kind of the takeaway is Damascus making and pattern planning enlightenment, basically. So you can see through any kind of pattern that is out there in the world, or you can better plan your own patterns. Again, to economize your time and the efficiency of your material is what this is all about. So I'm excited to teach that class again. We already got people, after talking about it last week, we already got some people inquiring about it. If more people are interested, send me an email. My contact information is on my Instagram. in the contact at the top of the profile, or you can just go to Malmasi Fire Arts on Instagram, or sorry, .com, MalmasiFireArts.com to get more information. Send me an email there. But I'm excited about it, and I'm excited to, I think I was able to squeeze in, I'm going to get some time to work with Joshua Prince and Joyce Cuddy, who Joyce is fucking slaying it right now. I love it. I'm so excited to see all the amazing support she's been getting for, her work. She is so talented. And actually Jeff, I think just had her on the podcast again.
We lost the audio. Was
oh
corrupted.
No! That I thought you guys so. Did a redo.
No, we're gonna do a redo.
You're
we'll
do a redo.
Okay. But God, I have so to tell. She had lost. Her work. Nah, look, happens. This fucking business. It fucking happens.
Fucking.
But her work was in Sweden. With at Tormek with mine. So.
We'll talk oh no! About shit. That.
Yeah. She's good.
Yeah, she's
awesome. Really good person too.
Super talented and a badass fisherman.
I have something to add to your schedule on your Maker Camp schedule, but I'm not. I have something to announce that you better be at, and I'm not going to talk about it until later in the show.
Uh-huh.
It's called Radio Tease, ladies and gentlemen.
Stick Radio around Tease. And find out.
Stick around and fucking find out.
But anyways, that's and then what is it? Oh, I got a new handle. I'm finishing up on a knife to get sent out or. You know, sold out into the world hopefully soon. Other than that, I'm really psyched about this weekend. Gabe Fletcher actually gets in today in a couple hours, so I'm excited to see him and hang out. And
boy, it's gonna be good. You're happy today.
Yeah, I'm on the juice.
Are you?
Hey, I'm all juiced up right now.
Is this like the is this the what did you, what was it before the what is the collagen? Are you have like your collagen
no,
doses
no,
up
no.
today?
I had my coffee this morning, and I have a prescription for Adderall from ADHD, and so I took a half of Adderall, and so I think that's why I'm a little, like, hot to trot right now.
No,
we'll see how it keeps up.
No, I'm into it. No, okay. You're happy is good. Happy is good. Craig,
don't
how
abuse
the hell
drugs,
are you?
Guys.
Craig,
I'm
how
good.
Are you?
I'm good. I've had three mornings this week where I've been grinding and setting stuff up and getting stuff done, which is really nice. So. Kids are all back to school. Buddy, our youngest, he's only two, but he started doing mornings this week. It's been difficult, I'll be honest with you.
Why?
Well, first of all, missing him because, you know, we've been together 24 hours a day since the day he was born. But he's struggling a bit. He's only two and going into school, you know, speaking a foreign language and leaving us. So, yeah, it's difficult to leave him behind. He's crying, and then you go to pick him up, and he's still crying, and it's like,
fuck.
Oh. So we've had three. He was a little bit better today. He wasn't crying when we picked him up today. So he's doing half days at the moment until he's a bit more settled. So I've had three mornings where I've been able to just get stuff done, which is really nice. And because the way I'm going to be working is going to be slightly different, not taking sort of pre-orders and not doing restaurant orders, they'll all just be individual pieces. The way I've set up is really sort of minimalistic, and I'm really enjoying it. So basically, in my barn, I've got one. It's just a huge table. It's a huge dining table, actually, an old one, this big old oak thing in the middle of the barn, and I've got a grinder on there. I've got a sharpener on there. I've got a drill press on there, and I just go around to different faces of this table, and everything's there. So when you're just doing one piece, it just works really nicely.
Hmm.
So at the moment, everything's really tidy and working well, so we'll see how that goes. But been really, really enjoying it, just getting stuff done again. And as an update from last week, those old belts, they still haven't slapped me in the face. They're doing a great job, so it's working well.
In my mind, I'm picturing when you were talking about the dining room table in your barn, I'm picturing the cover of Beggar's Banquet. I don't know if you feel free to look up the cover of Beggar's Banquet
the
for the Rolling
thing,
Stones.
Right. Yeah, let me
it's,
look at
it's,
the
it's, there's,
cover.
There's like, I believe, if I, my memory serves, it's like this fucking big-ass table, and then Keith Richards got a fucking feet up on there. And it's like this, you know, I see that you're having this like luxurious French situation with all your drill pressing on there like some sort of fucking fantastic.
You know what?
Maniac.
I'm looking at that picture.
It's,
and it pretty
good,
much
right?
is just this really long, yeah. big old oak, ancient table. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
and which is actually in the
oh,
house.
Yeah.
It was in the house when we bought it here, and obviously we weren't going to use it.
Oh,
it's
no
it's
shit.
Just a bit shitty. But that's pretty much what I'm using. And
nice.
And yeah, at the moment, because everything's really clean and it, yeah, it's working well.
That
so
might be the, that might be the thumbnail for the next, this episode.
Quite possibly. I shall take a picture. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, nice. The barn has dirt floors, and it's not very straight. So there's bits of packing under legs and all sorts going on, but, it's doing the job. It's doing the job nicely. So yeah. Yeah. So it's been good. It's been good. So I'm getting sort of 4 hours each morning and, I'm glad that the weather has turned a bit. It does feel right. It feels as if September the 1st happened. And basically what happens here in France, September the 1st happens, everything stops. July and August are super busy, events on all the time, everything's open. 1st of September, everybody shuts their shutters and that's it until next sort of the next summer, really. And we're always like, it's still hot, what's going on? But this time it does feel as if almost on that day the weather went, okay, we're getting ready for winter now. And it's really cooled down. It's getting dark a lot earlier. And I'm really enjoying it. Really enjoying it. And it's like, oh, yeah, cool. So it's, yeah, it's actually nice to work in that as well. You know, the mornings are fresh. And yeah, really enjoy. It's been a really good week. Really
That's
good
awesome.
Week, nice.
Yeah. That barn must be really big and easy to vent.
Basically, I've got huge, huge barn doors at the front. And I can open them up. And there's like a, almost like a roof to those doors then when they open, so it like it creates like a open walkway kind of thing. And yeah, as you know, I just spuff all that dust out the back then. So yeah, it works really well. And I think it's gonna be cold in the winter, but I'm all right with that.
You need to set up a tripod and get you action shots. I need to see you working on this, you know, Keith Richards table I see like the doors open and maybe the dust from the ground is kind of catching the light coming in from the, I'm into it, man. This is like, this has also got like a kind of Bridges of Madison County situation going on. I don't know. Maybe you guys are too young for that shit, but you know, Clint Eastwood is, you know, kind of making it happen at this.
At the moment when I'm doing my, the podcast studio here is in the barn as well, but it's up like on a second floor in the barn. So I've got to walk through all that to get to the studio. And it's happened a couple of times now. There's an owl that's nesting in the barn. And twice the owl is, I don't think it's going for me, but it's swooping down. It's coming towards, you know?
And oh, yeah, it's telling you to fuck off.
It's telling me to fuck off, for basically. Sure. So, yeah, you've never seen a man run as fast. When I run to this podcast studio, particularly now when it's the evening, you'll never see anything like it. My head is down and I'm gone. So I'm hoping now with the noise in the daytime, it'll just think, I can't be doing with this, and it'll fuck off somewhere else.
Yeah, you've got all sorts of, you got spiders, you have snakes, you have mice.
Oh, we got it all going on. It's, and they're all going on, yeah.
They're all after you. Yeah, they're all after you.
And we got bloody chicks everywhere at the moment as well, so they're coming into the barn every 2 seconds. Yeah, it's all a bit crazy. It's like I'm building an ark or something in here, you know? The animals are coming to me.
Of like the worst animals, though. I mean, snakes and mice and fucking...
the ones you don't want to save.
Yeah. None of the ones you want. Yeah. It's Noah's, you know, bork. Fucking terrible.
Very good. So, Jeff, what's been going on? How was Sweden...
Dude, Sweden is amazing. Shout out to my friends at Tormek. I got reached out. I met the guys at Tormek last year in Barcelona. We had a nice conversation. We kind of had a lot of nice conversations, and they invited me and Joyce to be in this thing called Sharp Makers. It's an exhibition of people who use a Tormek. Tormek is, they make this kind of portable rolling water stone, which is a really amazing system. And they invited me in it, and then they had a lot of people who use the Tormek who make things, and then they had this beautiful exhibition. So I sent a piece out, and then I've known a number of them for a while, and then they said to me, how'd you like to come out? And I said, well, if you know, my wife can come too, it'd be great. So one of the reasons why we went is because we left on the Monday after we sent our daughter to college, and we thought it would be a nice way for us to kind of like get the fuck out and, you know, kind of chill out. So Sweden's amazing. Tormek is a really, really interesting company, way more interesting than I realized. I spent a lot of time with those guys. They gave us a tour of Stockholm, everything. Everything was amazing. It was beautiful. They were so nice. But here's the interesting thing about Tormek. So we spent the first day in Stockholm, And then we went to their near where their shop is called Lindesberg, and then we stayed in the city called Udesboro or something like that. I fucked it up just now. And so we've got a tour of Tormek, and what was interesting is the history of Tormek, and this is what's interesting towards makers. So you think, you know, all right, so their sharpening system, what's the big deal? The concept behind how Tormek was built is the classic maker concept, which is back in the day, the way, you know, all these guys in Sweden, they're not as entrepreneurial. They're more like they do these hobbyist things, and it's more kind of more socialist democrat kind of society. And it's real, actually great, terrific. So most of the people in Sweden, they have tons of woods. They're all big hobbyist woodworkers. So they all have axes and they get chisels and all this shit. So this guy, his name is Torgny Jansson. His dad had this giant wheel, like a two-person stone that, you know, it takes two people to work. When you get one, you know, you get the kid to schlep it all over the place. And then one person's cranking it and the other one's trying to sharpen whatever they're... And this guy, Torgny, he's, you know, schlepping his dad's thing around. He's an engineer, and he thinks to himself, there's got to be a better way. For my dad's getting older, and I'm not going to be here all the time. How's he going to fucking sharpen his bullshit? So he figured out this way to make this smaller stone, and then he made an axle. Next thing you know, he used his electric drill, and then he kind of sized it down where the drill is not on the axle, but it's like on a wheel, and it's sized down, and it's slowly, slowly. And then he welded up this thing, and next thing you know, it was just like really cool thing. Next thing you know, his dad's friends want it, and then all these people want one of these small, you know, very movable sharpening stones. Next thing you know, he decides, all right, I'm gonna build this company. But the interesting thing is the way he's built the company, the way he built the company, he died in the I think the late 90s, is that everything is a very sincere step towards making stuff for the customer. So if just to ask you too, who do you think the biggest buyer of a Tormek sharpening system is? What type of person?
Type of person?
Yeah, like who would be the woodworker? Because I spent a lot of time with one of the distributors in the unit. Loggers. That's a good answer. What do you think, Greco?
Yeah. Woodworkers.
Well, it's carpenters. Because the idea is the original idea was he was making this system so his dad could sharpen his chisels and his tools. So the number one buyer of Tormek are not knife makers. They're woodworkers. So like it was really interesting because when they created all these things, because they have 30 patents on all their products and all their systems, and everything's very innovative, and their universal bar and they have like 20 or 30 different types of jigs for different, you know, sharpening drill bits and sharpening chisels and round chisels and all this shit. And it's amazing. But what's interesting is they always had in the mindset of how do we fix, and I don't want this to sound like a big commercial, but everything is universal. So if you have a Tormek from 30 years ago, all the parts now work on it. They wanted to make sure that they were taking care of their customer because they're not trying to sell 10 grinders to one guy. They're trying to sell it. They're trying to keep their customers and have them coming back. So what was interesting, and I wanted to pose this to you, and feel free, you know, ask me whatever you want, but and I do have a couple funny stories. We can save that for later. What was interesting to me was the takeaway was when they're looking at their customer base, they're looking at having long-term relationships. Like the things that they built, like they're not trying to do planned obsolescence where, oh, you want the axe jig, well, you have to buy the T9. They don't do that.
Yeah.
Like you can get a, if you have a, let's say our friend Tom Moss got a Tormek at a yard sale, and he told me that the stone was broken. He can get another one. They don't fit. And he can get an axe, a new axle. It'll fit. All the parts fit for the old shit too. And I really was impressed with the concept of the short-term decisions in business and long-term decisions in business. And I thought about it in regards to pointing to you guys. In regards to when we talk on Knife Talk, people ask us these questions, and we usually give answers that are short-term answers. We rarely give long-term answers. And I say this in the sense of one of our listeners says, this guy wants me to give him a free knife what do we do? Tell them to fuck off or not? And we always say, yeah, tell them to fuck off. But there are also these long-term decisions that we really never talk about. We're always talking about these short-term decisions on how you treat customers and customer service.
Yeah.
And what do you guys think about that idea of how we can be in business long-term and short-term?
Well, I think there's the similarities. I mean, I think the three of us make knives that we want to last forever. We're not making things that are temporary that people need to come back to us with. And in fact, I think, you know, all three of us will happily, you know, receive one of our old knives back and give it, you know, sharpen up and send it back. So I think we're along those lines. You know, what we're making is something that, as I said, we want it to last forever. We want it to be almost a bit of a legacy as well, you know, to live way past us. So I think we see our products as something that doesn't need to be replaced. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. What do you think, Mareko?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've kind of waxed poetic on it, I guess. I don't know the better word that just came to fucking mind. Anyways, about the idea that I still kind of, I think of my knives as my knives, like that I still own them in a way. And I part of that ideology comes from, what's his name? Yvon Chouinard, the founder of Patagonia, and the way they treat their products. And as though, you know, they sell them and they get out into the world, but they take care of them as though they are their own personal items. And so I think, yeah, like Craig was saying, you know, taking them back, doing spa days, re-etching them, sharpening them, helping to take care of those knives so that they do continue to last for as long as possible. Because last thing you want, or I think at least for me, last thing I want is to spend all this time, not just the time making the tool, but all the years of understanding and practice and learning about how to optimize the performance of the knife to make this really great tool, for it then to just like sit in a drawer or on a shelf or somewhere and just kind of rot away and get kind of shitty and fucked up because someone was either too embarrassed or doesn't have the knowledge to take care of it. And so I'm always happy and willing to take care of my own tools that I've made so that they can continue to be used properly as working tools. I think woodworkers have a very unique, especially wood turners and anybody working with chisels and stuff like that, have a unique relationship where like it, that is part of their understanding of the use of that tool, is really taking care of it and keeping it sharp and oiled and sand or and properly stored, where for some reason, especially when it comes to culinary knives, there's been this this idea of just like, ah, fucking forget it. Don't worry about it. Just leave it in the sink or leave it covered in crap. And it's like, no. There's a lot of benefits to be had, especially in regard to how long that thing lasts, if you just have a very simple relationship with it of keeping it clean, keeping it dry, and keeping it properly stored.
Yeah. See, and I think a difference we've got with a company like Tormek who are making that kind of product is, if we do a good job, people might come back to us because people want multiple knives for various purposes. I think if you make a product which does it all, okay, people may come back and buy extra jigs and all that kind of stuff. You know, I can't see people buying multiple units such as a Tormek. I know, Jeff, you may have a couple, and various other people have a few of them. But we're sort of, we're edge cases, really, aren't we? Where, you know, the average person probably has one, and if that lasts forever, I mean, that's the customer done with, you know?
Mm. That's interesting that you mentioned that, because I talked with the CEO for a long time, and he, you know, the custom knife maker is really not totally 100% on their radar, with the exception of Florentine Kitchen Knives, which they've did some videos with, and then another. There's not, they know if, like when I was talking, I had drinks, we had, every night we were having drinks with these. I was talking to the CEO and I was talking about Bob Kramer, and he says, who's that? And I'm like, how the fuck do you not know who Bob Kramer is? And like, this is, I mean, you make an edge, you know, so there is a long line of, and these guys are, I mean, they're not small time guys. I mean, they're import to 40 different countries all over the, yeah. I mean, they're the biggest knife sharpening company, and we can go into that later. But what's interesting is when you were saying that, Craig, is, I felt as though it was more along the lines of they're very concerned. They're not concerned. they're very interested in not only making a customer, but keeping a customer for life. And part of that is giving them opportunities and offers that once they get the T8 or whatever, there are all these new things that can open up. So like the drill press, you know, that you can sharpen your drill bits. You just get the attachment, like all these different attachments add on to all the different variations. When I was talking about long-term, I was really thinking about the concept of how do we keep our customers? And I know you make a knife, you send it to the knife, and that's the way it is. But I feel as though one of the things that maybe our listeners who are more along the lines of artisans as opposed to people in business seem to forget that having a good relationship with your customer is money in the bank down the road. Because when you have answer emails on time, you take care of a problem. Recently a guy sent us a message. He got the knife as a gift. The next thing you know, it's got a big bend in it. He didn't blame himself. He didn't say he dropped it, but it was very clear. He sent me a picture. I'm like, well, I didn't send it out like that. And we said, send it in. We'll take care of it. And I feel as though, and I just had a friend of mine, a customer of mine, did a post, and he did this really nice post, and he was saying that he had sent a message to this custom knife maker, and that they never responded, and he sent again, never responded, and then he just like forget it. Next thing you know, it comes to me. We had a knife that we had problems with the shipping. I went really, you know, I called him. I was really very on top of everything, and he just kept becoming a really good customer. And he wrote about the idea of, you know, you can have a customer for life. You can support businesses that you believe in when they have, you know, down the line. I got a guy now, he's been buying knives for me for 10 years, and every so often he flakes on me. You've bought a lot of knives, but at the same time, he'll have us, you know, come up with a crazy bid for something, and then he'll ghost us for a while. And that's just part of the game, and, you know, we'll get him down the line. I feel as though one of the things is we make short-term decisions and long-term decisions. And my fear is a lot of guys listen to this podcast don't think about making long-term decisions in terms of their business and happiness.
Yeah. Well, and I think along the lines of what we've already been talking about is, and what Tormek sounds like they're doing is they're creating a strong level of trust and rapport with their clients. And so, like you're saying, as knife makers, how do we do that with people that we have maybe only one or two interactions with? But I think what you're saying, Jeff, totally makes sense, because maybe they're not a customer for life, but because of the way you've treated those people, they are always going to refer people to you.
Yeah.
Ah, true. Yeah, not just that customer. It's their circle of, yes, yeah, you're right.
That's the truth. You know, this talking about social networking, in social media and social networking, sure. Word of mouth is underrated. Yeah. And a lot of times I still see these people post the pictures on Instagram. I'm not getting any new viewers. I'm leaving this place. Well, what about the people you already have?
Yep.
They're not good enough. They're not good enough to, you know, you know, some of them are your customers. They're done. You're done with them. It's madness.
Sure.
It's total madness to think that you're going to just throw away the baby with the bathwater just because, you know, you're not finding new people. You got to take care of the old people. Otherwise, I mean, because they're the ones when somebody says, hey, I need a knife, who you want your name to be on the tip of their tongue.
Yep. Top of mind.
Well, that's
huge.
And I think
your newsletter that you do is also another great. It's not just the actual interaction when it comes to the barter, or not the barter, but the exchange of, you know, making the knife for the person, but that continued interaction with them using the newsletter. It just continues that relationship, and it keeps you, like you're saying, tip of the tongue, top of mind, so that, again, when they're thinking of a knife or somebody mentions they're interested in getting a knife, you're going to be at the top of their mind when somebody happens to be talking about it. And then that person it's that grassroots growth, word of mouth. That person's going to mention you. That other person's going to, maybe if they don't already follow you, start following you, maybe sign up for your newsletter, and you potentially have a customer. But then because they keep getting the newsletter, they're seeing your posts, maybe they're not even buying anything from you. But again, another friend is talking about the idea of knives or taking care of knives or complaining about knives, and they refer that person to you again. And it just keeps building. And I agree. All these people are complaining about And I understand it's fucking hard because a lot of people, it was really fucking easy. And now you got to get dirty, like dirty as in not like do fucked up things, but you got to get your hands in the dirt. You got to work the land and you got to make those relationships. And part of that is it takes your time, but you got to do that work. If you're going to develop that rapport, that trust with your clients, I think that they're going to continue to come back to you or refer other people back to you. That way the number count of visibility doesn't actually matter, because I don't think sales necessarily correlate to those number counts of views, of followers, or any of that shit. The greatest value is going to come from if somebody that I trust telling me you should check out this movie, you should go get this product, and telling me why they love it is going to be so much more valuable to me than seeing a post about it from a complete fucking stranger out of nowhere.
This customer of mine who did this kind of appreciation post to me, if the guy he originally sent the email to and followed up and like listened to him, he's as far as I'm concerned, dude's out like $7,000 from not answering an email. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Sure.
You know, I mean, like,
was that me?
No,
did he not?
Email? You know, I mean, he can't afford one of your tiny little pinky knives for $7,000. But I'm just saying that, like, I mean, we'll talk about it afterwards. But I mean, it was like, I think about how I treat my customers, and a lot of it comes from my restaurant industry. Charlie Palmer, I learned more about being customer service from Charlie Palmer than the night I had to run a floor. I'd never done it before. He just sat me down and he said, "Listen, treat everybody like your friend and family and make them happy." That was the easiest information possible. And there's no magic bullet. There's no, you know, everything's not black and white. Everything's gray. Obviously, some things work, some things don't. Obviously, there's some people who are total pains in the ass and there aren't. Sure. But it's like, I think about this particular fucking guy, he lost out a lot of money. And it was only because he wouldn't return his emails. And it's not either one of you guys. But at the same time, it's like, business is hard, and you got to figure out your core reason for your business. And when I was talking to Tormek, I was talking to the US guys, and I was talking to Swedish guys, and I was like, you know, I don't understand why Tormek doesn't start a business where they have a sharpening service. You know, use your Tormek, you see the Tormek on the sign, people bring their knives, everyone's trying to sharpen their knives. And they're like, that's not the focus of our business. We're making machines. We're not starting a new thing. We're not Avenue. It was like they shut me down right away. I was like, I'm not talking about this anymore. But it was like they were very focused, and they were, and the business is doing really well. And the funny thing is like the working for Tormek in Sweden is so popular. If their break rooms, and they have fika. Do you know what fika is? Fika is this Swedish thing. It's unbelievable. Every day you have fika. Twice, probably once or twice a day. It's a coffee break where they have this beautiful break room with ping pong tables and billiards tables, and they got saunas and all this shit. And it's like a college campus. And you have fika. And when you have fika, you have the guys in the factory and then the guys in sales. They're all coming down for coffee and like a cinnamon bun. And they take fika very seriously, but it's this very communal situation. These Swedes got it down, man. These Swedes got it down. And let me tell you one thing about the Swedish people. That whatever economy is going on over there, their mayonnaise economy is like through the roof. Everything is with fucking mayonnaise. I swear to God, there was not a meal. There wasn't like a fucking half a quart of mayonnaise in that fucking meal. So mayonnaise business in Sweden. God bless you.
I mean, mayonnaise is a pretty fucking golden condiment.
It's a golden condiment, but
a good mayonnaise.
There are limits to how much mayonnaise you can have. It's not like, you know, there are really, and the limits come very quick. The limits come very quick, and all of a sudden you can get turned off to mayonnaise pretty quick. But we had a great time. I'll tell you one funny story, and this was hilarious. So we were taking the train back from Lindesberg to Stockholm, and it was me and the American Tormek guys, and then these guys from Rockler, which is this woodworking company, really great guys. And my wife and I are talking. She had a blast. Everybody treated her like, I mean, she had such a good time, and it was really funny. So my wife and I are talking on the train. These people next to us, these two guys, one of them says, "Oh, are you from the United States?" And we said, "Yes, yeah, we're from New York." They started asking us the craziest questions, and the questions kept getting crazier and crazier. In the beginning, I was getting annoyed. But then as they kept on getting crazier and crazier, I was like, all right, let's fucking go. So the first thing is you're from New York. How come you don't sound like the guys from the Ramones? Because the Ramones are from Queens. Like, well, I had to explain the different dialect, you know, the different accents. And he goes, have you ever had Colt 45? You know, it's a, you don't know, Craig. Colt 45 is a malt liquor. In the United States, it's really like they serve it in like 64 ounces, and it's just like pretty rough stuff. It's like beer flavored soda. Okay. It's terrible. And I'm like, yeah, we're talking about that. He's like, have you ever had Bud Light? I'm like, yeah, I had Bud Light. And he says, is it true that you can have a gun in your house? I'm like, yeah, you can have a gun in your house. Is it true you can have a gun in your car? I'm like, yeah, you can have a gun in your car. So they're peppering us with these questions, and he goes, like one after the other, like this. Is it true that you can marry your sister in Kansas? And I'm like, what? She only has to be 14, right? And I'm just like, what? Oh, and then at this point, I'm just like, let's go. Now's your chance. I'm giving you free range, any question you want. So it was just one after the other. And my friend who was trying to read his book was like, he was laughing. I'm like, any question you have about America, I will answer. I need to hear. And it was like one after the other. Is it true you can marry your sister if she's 14? And it is, what about Mormons? What can Mormons really have seven wives and all this shit? And we're going, and my wife is just like, this is unbelievable. And I'm like, this is the way Americans think about New Yorkers too, by the way. These are the same questions I get as a New Yorker. Mm. So at the end, we're talking and we talked about our age and stuff like that. And I said, I'm 50. And my wife and I are 50. And he goes, you're 50? How's that possible? And I said, well, you know, when you drink a lot of Colt 45, and I pointed to my wife, I said, you marry your sister, that's the fountain of youth. that was the end of the conversation. I don't know if you believe me or not, but it was hilarious. It was really fucking good.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Pointed to my wife, put my thumb in my wife, I said, when you marry your sister at 14, that's the fountain of youth. So it was an awesome trip.
Oh, my God.
It was an awesome trip, and I interviewed them, and the this past week's Full Blast, they rented a, I'll tell you two more funny stories, and we'll leave you alone. They rented a recording studio for me to run a podcast. I'm just like, I'd never done that before, but no problem. So we did a podcast. It was really, really good, and it was told the very deep history, which is an interesting history of how...
So who are you talking to in the podcast? Who is it with?
One of the heads of sales, this guy Hugo, awesome guy, and then this guy Carl, who is the part of the American Tormek team. He's a digital marketing team.
Yeah.
And it was great. Yeah. And we had engineer Victor, we called him Victor Behind the Glass, because that's in the radio, you say Behind the Glass. So we had a good time. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, the day of the event, they were having these presentations. And they mentioned that I might do a presentation. I wasn't really 100% prepared. But I guess somebody backed out or something like that. So they said to me, hey, Jeff, you think you could do a presentation in front of this group? And this group was like, maybe 50 or 60, maybe 75 people. Oh, wow. I'm like, yeah, no problem. Okay. So the first guy who went was this famous Swedish musician maker, a musical instrument maker. So there's this famous wooden carved, it looks like a giant violin, but instead of where you put your fingers to hit the strings to make the notes, not where you're strumming, the other hand, there are these keys that push in, and it's this crazy look. And then there's every string has two extra strings to give it this kind of richness. And it was beautifully carved, and it was amazing. So he did a 25, and so he starts playing it. And somebody says, oh, yeah, you're going after this guy. I'm like, oh my God. He's playing this incredible instrument that nobody has ever seen before.
Did you do a rap or something?
Well, yeah, here it gets funny. It gets really funny.
My name's Jeff, and I'm here.
Yeah, that's right. I started singing about Colt 45. So he starts playing, and it's beautiful, and it's amazing. And I'm turning to the guy from Rockland. I'm like, how am I gonna fucking compete with this shit? I don't have anything. I'm not even prepared. So he puts his stuff down. He gets to the board, and he's got a slideshow, and he's got all this stuff. And then as it's going on, it's getting boring and boring and boring. Oh, in my mind, I'm thinking, all right, he should have played the fucking instrument and fucked the way off. He puts up pie charts. And then the guy from Rockland turns to me and he goes, you any pie charts? I'm like, no. And he goes, you're fucked. So it was really funny. And then I was just like, all right, this has gone too far. I'm not going to go. I'm going to go 5 minutes. And then I just talked about how amazing he was. And I talked about Tormek, and I made the connection between, I talked a little bit about blacksmithing and stuff like that. And I get 5 minutes. My wife was just like, dude, that was a strong move. Fast. You don't want to go after pie charts. I'm like,
in and out.
In and out. Yeah. Moves are good. So Sweden was great.
Sounds like a good trip.
Did you say Joyce was there too?
Joyce was not there. Joyce couldn't make it, but her knife was there. And there were amazing wood carvings from Pat Lapp. I don't know if you guys know Pat Lapp. Yep. Pat Lapp's a Canadian wood carver. He's friends with Jimmy DiResta. They had blind wood turners having stuff there, which I don't know. Maybe, there's a blind wood turner. I mean, I had on the podcast. They're talking about the blind wood turner. And I said, I would think that the Tormek part would be the safest part of his day. Because you think about coming up on a lathe, a blind dude with a fucking sharp-ass chisel going up on a lathe. We get the fuck out of here. But great trip. I'm tired. And then as soon as we finished wrapping this up, I'm going down to Center for Metal Arts to do a friction folder class. So nice. I'm dead. But I do have an announcement for you, Mareko, about Maker Camp.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I know you guys were talking about, I listened to the last episode, and you guys are talking about how old I am, and I live a little bit left. I know all about it. Brian House and I are going to host a 5K on Sunday morning. 5K run.
Yo.
So Sunday morning, Brian House and I are going, and you can walk, you can run
Mareko,
ahead of us.
You've got it, Mareko.
You can go behind us.
I'm with you.
You can just run with us.
In spirit.
It does not matter. We're going to all meet at some point. Brian House of Work For It. I don't know if we're going to call it Run For It. I don't know what the fuck we're going to call it.
Brian
House, I think we should call it Run For It. That's what I think we should do. Call it Run For It. We're going to do a 5K Sunday morning, and I'm going to do it with Brian. It might just be me and Brian. But join us at Maker Camp Sunday morning. There will be more details in regards to when we're going to start in. But I want you to get up off your asses and join us Sunday morning at Maker Camp for Run For It with me and Brian House.
Last time I did a 5K, it was like a 35 or 37 minute 5K. Is that a good one?
That's good.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's great.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'll probably walk it though.
We're not going to like,
Jeff,
I mean,
Jeff,
we're not
going
to.
Listen now. Listen, Jeff.
Go ahead.
We know you're competitive.
I'm not
Brian's
competitive.
But listen, you know this is a run. This is a race, don't you? You can't let Brian beat you, and we'd be so disappointed.
Listen to me. I know that the difference between you and me, I know you're very competitive. I know you're the kind of guy, when you're playing Monopoly, you're not going so well, you're flipping the table up.
I know you.
It's like Beggar's Banquet. You're flipping the whole fucking table over. I'm done with competition, but at the same time, I just need to know I can do it. So I'm going to be doing it. I'm going to be doing a nice pace. I don't remember. I probably do like an 8.5 minute mile, 9 minute mile. Don't worry about that. If you want to join us, get off your fat asses Sunday morning at Maker Camp, and we're going to do a little run. So,
Great idea. Yeah.
Should do competition between podcasts.
What's the competition?
Get a couple guys from each of the podcasts.
The fuck out of here.
And then it's a cumulative time.
The fuck out of here. All those guys, you kidding me? Number one.
That way you can just carry me. I'll just walk it, and then you run your ass off.
Dude, listen. if anybody wanted to do a podcasting competition, I'm going to wipe all your fucking, rip all your asses. I almost said wipe all your asses, but I meant to say whip all your asses. I'll whip all them asses. Fucking Kim, get out of here. I ain't fucking with me. We haven't done one.
That'll be fun. I think. Yeah, you need to do an ad read whilst you're running halfway through.
Hope,
two of you record an ad read on your phones.
I hope Brian got a cigar hanging out of his mouth while he's running too.
Yeah,
and he's got his wife driving the. He's got his wife driving the Cybertruck ahead of him, playing like the American, the Hulk Hogan America song.
Songs from Top Gun.
Yeah. Yeah, the fucking guy. Guy's hilarious. Brilliant. Run For It.
I tell you, it sounded like you had a great time. And what Tormek reminds me of, a company where they build this great machine and they've got all these attachments. Do you know what they remind me of? Broadbeck Ironworks.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us all about it, Mareko.
Broadbeck Ironworks. I'm actually going to be hanging out at their tent at Maker Camp in about a month. They are the makers of just a fine, absolutely awesome grinding machine that is multifaceted. There's so many different attachments. And it's great because it's you can have like 6, 7, 8 different machines in one, all off the one grinder. These guys are awesome. I'm excited to see them at Maker Camp. And if you go to broadbackironworks.com, do your checking out, get whatever you need, and use Knife Talk 10 at checkout. Again, that's Knife Talk 10. You're going to save yourself 10%. So again, go to broadbackironworks.com, Knife Talk 10, and save yourself some cash and get yourself some great tools.
And if one of them guys ain't representing Broadback at the Run For It podcast, we have a problem. Ben, Seacrest, I better see your ass down there. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying. It. One of you better be down there.
Right, okay. Should we do a few questions? Have we got any left?
Jesus Christ, P.S. I come back from Sweden. I'm opening up our notes. You fucking went through the whole goddamn... I was like, there's nothing here. There is nothing here. Guys, you took care of every single one of them.
Just about.
You have anything to say for yourselves?
You're welcome.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're welcome. They've been festering away for a long time. We thought, let's get them done.
Yeah, you guys got to learn how to have a conversation with each other. Jesus Christ. You went through all of them. Jesus. We got new ones, though. And guys, if you want to submit your questions to Knife Talk Podcast or your listener feedback or your bit ideas or whatever, we got a lot of listener feedback, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And if I'm not here, they're going to answer every single fucking one of them is what they're going to do.
Hey, we got to do it every once in a while.
Well, I mean, I like to, my opinion is we got to keep these goddamn people company, and sometimes you got to chew the fat a little bit. You don't have to eat so fast. You know what I'm saying? It's not like like Kobayashi and Joey Chestnut eating hot dogs. You guys know about that?
No, nope.
Oh, this was the
World
biggest
champion hot dog slammers.
It was a glizzy contest of glizzy contests on Netflix. It was the world championship of eating hot dogs. And they had Joey Chestnut and Kobayashi. Craig, how many hot dogs do you think Joey Chestnut ate in 10 minutes?
Who is Joey Chestnut?
He was the Nathan's hot dog eating champion for years. How many hot dogs with buns, and don't cheat, you little bastard. How many hot dogs and buns did he eat in 10 minutes?
In 10 minutes. Right, okay. Let's say...
Don't cheat now.
Let's say 4 minutes. Let's say 40.
Ooh, 83.
I was going to say closer to 60. Ho!
83. Whoa. 83.
Deep throating. Jesus.
Yeah, definitely.
That's he must be one of those guys. Yeah, you just see them throwing the sausages down, you know?
Yeah, that's what she said.
Jeez. Yikes.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get on with some questions then. Before we do.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
Evenheat-kiln.com. I mentioned about having a minimalist setup at the moment. Obviously, the Evenheat takes center stage. You need one. Is Brian out of breath yet?
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at...
He needs to stop smoking, I think, doesn't he?
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
With promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
What the fuck?
I think the competition's on, Brian, if you're listening. Jeff doesn't like to admit it, but he's very competitive, and I think you've got him against the ropes.
I don't think so.
Right. Questions. If you've got any questions for us, because we've run out, we haven't got many left, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, so DM us those questions. This first one is from Leonardo Lee. And he says, is it worth acid etching Damascus before hand sanding to reduce the area you need to sand?
I don't understand what he's talking about.
Nomi, is it worth acid etching Damascus before hand sanding to reduce the area you need to sand?
Jeff, no. Are you familiar with this whole etching blades while hand sanding?
Yeah, the answer is no. It doesn't. I mean, if you're changing your grit progression, if you're changing your grit, if you ground your knife, and you need to change the scratch pattern, putting it in the acid before you hand sand is just going to make the fucking. It's going to make it harder on you because those gouges, those belt grooves are going to make them deeper.
Yeah,
and make them wider and make them kind of harder to take care of. So the answer is no.
Okay.
What do you think, Branko?
Well, my move after I come off the machine, a lot of the lines are, because I usually am grinding integral chef's knives and I have an integral, or my integral bolster is at an angle. A lot of my scratches are already kind of at an angle, but they're matching that angle of the integral bolster. And so when I start my hand sanding, I don't go the length of the blade. I usually go basically at 90 degrees to that previous angle and I'm scrubbing the blade. But I always finish whatever grit I'm trying to finish at, I will finish in the length of the blade. But I'm always changing the direction that I'm scrubbing so that I have that visual cue of different scratches. Because I think what I'm picking up here on now, I've heard in the past that people sometimes they'll dip their blade in the etch really quick just for like a 5-10 second dip. And that way... as you're scrubbing away, anywhere that the acid has etched at the bottom of the valley of those previous scratches, it'll still be visually there. You can see it more prevalently, I guess. And so you can just know when you got to keep going. If you're having issues with seeing some of the scratches, even if they're going in different directions, then maybe that's not the worst idea. But I wouldn't do anything longer than just a light, super light, quick etch, just to get some color on the steel so you can start scrubbing away, because a deep etch is not necessary. But otherwise, I would try to keep it out of the acid and keep it out of the etch and just change directions. I think Nick Wheeler, a long time ago, showed his process for etching or his hand sanding blades, and that is exactly it. He's constantly changing angles. One scratch will be at an angle, and then one is usually at the down the length of the blade, and then he'll go at an angle again as he progresses through the grits, and then whatever his final grit is, he'll just make sure that's down the length of the blade to make pulling stroke scratches a lot easier. But that would be my move. Have you guys heard of that, etching blades for hand sanding?
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Well, there it is.
There we go.
Right. I was super confused at first because I was like, "Why?" No, that's all good.
But then you had this nice conversation about how you hand sand, and that's where I'd rather us go. So,
all right.
There's going to be a question. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, go ahead. No, no, no. What were you going to say?
No, go ahead. I was going to say this is a question that we're going to have a very quick answer to. So go ahead.
This next one is from Bigham Forge. Sorry, I keep saying Big Ham Forge.
I know.
This is our friend from Australia. Okay, says, "Hey guys, I appreciate the answer given to my previous question. I have another regarding liner lock folding knives. I've made a few using 1.5 millimeter 316 stainless steel for the liner lock. I've been doing some research, and I'm being led to believe that titanium liners are more sought after than stainless liners. Being in Australia, I'm finding it hard to find titanium sheet that suits. I have also found that there are multiple grades of titanium. Which grade of titanium is most suitable for the locking mechanism, and does titanium need to be hardened on the lock face? The blades are 1084, 15, and 20 Damascus. Cheers, fellas." All right, what do you guys think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, 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 I suppose. Not a clue. Not a clue. I pass on that one.
Okay. What do you got, Jeff?
Oh, I definitely would use Sugandee's titanium. It's a very, very fine titanium. So if you go to Gamaco and you ask Corin, I'm sure he'll have, you just tell him you want some of the, some Sugandies, and then he'll get you squared
exactly.
away.
Exactly. Yes. Yep. Okay. So for this question, I phoned a friend. I reached out to our friend Ben from EDC Gearhouse. He's on Instagram at EDC Gearhouse. He's also part of Way of the Knife MI, which is in Michigan. They do all these great modifications, and he's got an awesome answer for us. So he says, okay, most commonly right now in the folding knife community, they're utilizing grade 5 6AL4V for their titanium, using it for liners. I can only think of two reasons you'd want that over traditional steel. Grade 5 is typically preferred now because it's more machine friendly than, say, grade 2, which is more of a pure titanium. Grade 5 is an alloy of aluminum and even some vanadium, I believe, he says. Check that spelling. Making it not so brittle and keeps it lightweight and anti-corrosive properties. So when you're machining these liners that are super thin, you're less likely to see chips and breaks in your materials. Another benefit of titanium is the ability to anodize the liners, whereas steel liners, you're left with heat anodizing to bronze or blue them. And then he said one last thing is to let him know that carbidizing should be considered on the lock face and liner to avoid lock stick as well as bearing tracks if he's using bearings. The steel bearings will eat into the tie material. So this must be some sort of process introducing excess carbon to the material so it uptakes some of the carbon into the titanium material. But that, or it's some sort of coating, so like a DLC, like a diamond-like coating, that is actually like a micro ceramic or a nano ceramic coating of sorts. And then also for the locking face, something I've seen on cross locks on liner knock knives is that they will actually have, they'll do all the titanium stuff, but then the part that's actually the actively engaging the bottom of the folding blade or the tang area is actually a carbide tooth that they attach to the tang or to the liner that is going to be coming across to lock the blade so that there's less wear there as well. So hopefully that helps, Bigham. But I just want to, again, thank you to Ben over at EDC Gearhouse for the massive what would that be called?
Hail Assist. Mary.
Yeah, assist.
Yeah. Super That's why assist. We're the number one knife-related podcast on this German-fested planet, ladies and gentlemen, because we don't know it. We know people who do.
Yeah.
Okay?
And I messaged him like 10 minutes ago, and that's what he sent back.
Well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but he's when you us. Send a message, people respond.
That's motherfucking right. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
He's got the next one.
You know what that's called? That's called good customer service from EDC Gearhouse. Motherfucker knows how to do customer service.
Yeah, boy.
There we go. Yeah.
All right.
Nice.
Who's got the next one?
Okay, Jeff, do you want to take the next?
The next one comes from our friend Justin Stout. He says, question here. I've been working on some Bowies.
Jacob.
Pardon me?
The eyesight's going
Jacob
already.
Jacob Stout.
You got your readers
on. We did that
on.
One? We didn't do Jacob Stout.
You just called
we
him
just
Justin.
Did, Begum. No, I said...
You called him Justin.
I said Jacob.
You said Justin
Stout. Oh, God, his memory's going too.
If I don't see your ass on that fucking run, I don't want to hear any more of these goddamn jokes. I don't want to hear another one of them jokes. You know, you're not out there huffing and puffing, big boy. You're out there. You're going to be out there with us, whether you like it or not.
I'm into it.
All right, good. Get your running shoes. No drinking the night before. No smoking the night before.
No, I'm not promising any of that.
I'm just going to drag your ass the whole way. I would drag your ass the whole way. It's fine. Jacob Stout says, question here. I've been working on some Bowies for the past few weeks, and drilling holes in guards has been the bane of my existence. My bits keep wandering to the point where I'll start a hole right next to the previous one, and it'll come out the bottom like an eighth of an inch apart from the previous hole in some random direction. Is this a problem with my bits, my drilling technique, my puny drill press? Thank you. You guys are the best. This is a great question.
Hmm.
Big, great question.
What do you think?
I think that the problem is there's a lot of problems.
Yes.
Number one, soft materials and thin bits, and thick soft materials and thin bits are not friends. That's number one. Yeah. Like if you have your, especially I'm in imagining that these that he has his like an eighth inch drill bit, and he has it all the way as far as it's sticking out. He's got like a quarter of an inch of it in the chuck, and so it's long and kind of flabby while it's flying around. That's number one. And number two is that thin stuff, if the bit is very thin and you're going through a lot of material, thick material, and if the plate's not, if it's not sitting straight in your vise, that can be a problem too. But a flabby drill bit, man, those fucking things dance around that material. Dance around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Craig?
Yeah, pretty much that. If it's a thin drill bit, you know, really chuck it up. So any of that give will be taken in the chuck.
Taken in the chuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would add to that. Yeah. Or agree with you guys on that. You definitely get the bit up in the chuck as far as it'll go. Bring your work as close to the drill bit as possible. That way the cullet isn't like at the end of its throw trying to drill a straight hole. It's basically just leaving you're lowering it as basically as little as possible or as necessary. But unfortunately, while good holes can be drilled, like a good series of holes can be drilled, its drill presses aren't necessarily designed for precision work. And a mill is going to be much better. But even with a cross slide vise, which kind of emulates a drill or a mill in a way, especially for keeping things in line, that will help. But sharp drill bit, a drill bit that's not going to deflect a lot, like Jeff saying and Craig saying, like none of these flabby drills or drills that aren't super long. You don't need a long drill, especially for drilling guards. So that everything's really tight and short and staying really close to the its original position before you even turned on the drill press. I would also be wondering about the table. If it's a little tabletop bench, drill press, that table, there's also deflection that can happen there, especially if the drill bit's a little bit dull, even the slightest bit dull. If it's not cutting the material, it's pushing into the surface of the material as well as trying to cut it at the same time. And that creates a lot of friction. That requires a lot of force. And if you're pushing down really hard, that's going to cause that tiny little table on your little drill press to bend downward a little bit. And so that's another thing. If you can block it up underneath, that will help, but it's not going to be a perfect fix. And I think you just got to, until you can upgrade to a mill or something more sophisticated, I think you just got to get good at undersizing your slot and then filing it into shape to get things dialed in. Because otherwise, yeah, you're just going to keep fighting this over and over and over again.
There's a few other things we can talk about drilling because I have my nice drill press came from from the Center for Metal Arts years ago, and it still has some slop in the table to the point where every time we put a drill bit in, I'm always putting a square up against it because it most likely is a little bit off, and a little bit off on, you know, like a 3/8 of an inch of material, it shows. I mean, it things don't match up sometimes. Yeah. So I'm always trying to like level it up and making sure that it's level and stuff like that. But if you have an eighth inch drill bit, and because I would imagine that that's probably what he's using, because I mean, obviously if you're tang, you're probably undersizing the tang. I would imagine eighth inch drill bit. If it's dull and you're trying to push it harder than it's cutting, like I always refer to drilling as cutting less than drilling, because I want the head of the drill bit to cut chips. Otherwise, the more you push, the more likely the bit is to slightly bend, not bend, but like warp a little bit. And once it warps, especially in a piece of bronze, it's going to start to turn and it's not going to go straight anymore. Mm-hmm. That's something to think about. Like drill bits need to be sharp and they need to go slower, and pushing harder does not make the drill bit go better. That's for sure.
Well, and non-ferrous metals will work harden, and some stainless steels will also work harden. And that's going to happen more with a dull bit that's creating a lot of friction in the steel. Not even necessarily making it hot. It's actually the friction, the vibratory action between the drill press or the drill bit and the material, and it will harden. And so some stuff you actually have to, after a couple, like maybe you drill a couple of holes, and then you actually, if it's copper or brass or bronze, it might not be a bad idea to actually anneal that material before going and drilling the second round of holes, because now that material all around it has been hardened, and that's going to be way harder on your drill bit and way more difficult to keep things all nice and square and from deflecting when you're drilling that hole.
I remember we were in a metal shop and we had to drill all these holes, and I was trying to get one last hole out of this one drill bit, and it was just, it had a little bit farther to go, and I'm pushing, and you can start to see everything's getting red, and then I'm like, all right, this bit's over. Yeah. I work hard in that spot and I destroyed more brand new bits because it became harder than the bits. I destroyed every single bit. Mm-hmm. And that is something that really happens. And the hardest part is the idea of really understanding the limitations of inexpensive tools. Some of these, I have a couple of those cheap drill presses, and we don't use them for anything precision because I know for a fact that they're not meant for drilling in a long deep hole and something going on. So that's a very standard problem that I would. Mareko's right. You're almost better off doing a bigger hole and then filing it in if it's bronze. And if you're not figuring out a way to get, it could be your material's not straight in the vise either. You know, could be like if it's, especially if you've already preformed it and it's got a little bit off. Or if you're using a hand drill press or hand drill, that's a fucking recipe for disaster. Oh, yeah, try to drill a straight hole. When we used to have to do posts for railings. We'd have one guy standing on one side, one guy standing on the other side while we're trying to drill holes, and one guy say, all right, to the left, to the right, to the left, right. You don't, if you're drilling by yourself and holding it, you can't see if you're level at all. You know, it's, so you have to, like, if you're trying to do it with a drill, I mean, you're going to put that thing in, you know, it's going to be 90 degree fucking hole by the time you're done with it if you do it by hand. And then sometimes you guys are having your drills too fast. Speed them down. Mm-hmm. Make them slow. Make a sharp bit and drill them slow.
Yeah,
that's it. Don't drill.
Yeah, speed and feed is a real thing, and there are charts out there that tell like what kind of RPMs you should be turning for the not only the size of the drill bit, but also for the material that's being cut.
You guys are cowboying them fucking drill bits, dudes.
Yeah, rough handling them. Yeah, yeah. Okay. The next one is from Dennis Pennington. Dennis Pennis, I have a question, fellas. When you're cutting and restacking Damascus during pattern development, do you grind your pieces down through the decarb layer only through enough to clean the scale off? I'm a huge fan of the show, guys. Definitely listen to the new episode in the shop today. I love all you guys' work. Thank you for everything you do for the community. So I suppose, Mareko, this is one for you, I suppose. When you're cutting and restacking Damascus and you're grinding.
Okay. Unless, Jeff, do you have anything to add? Because you have experience with Damascus too, right?
I mean, I made a couple bars. I mean, but at the same time, I'm like, I know my lane. And P.S., you always do this every so often. A fucking question directly to you, and then you'll turn to me and Craig and says, well, what do you guys think? Yeah. And Craig is just like throwing his glasses in the air. And I'm just like, I got nothing, motherfucker. You know that. This is your department.
Okay, I'm just trying to be...
I appreciate that, but at the same time, I mean, like, you know... I'll add something at the end. I will add something. For you, I'm going to add something at the end. Go ahead.
It's very good.
Go ahead.
Okay, so he's asking if he needs to grind through the decarb layer. So when you are bringing your steel up to a high temperature, especially your carbon steel, but it's all steels, it will just start to form the forge scale on the outside. But also what happens is once the steel hits critical temperature, which is above roughly 1350, and most of us are forging, especially forging blades and forging Damascus, closer to like 2000 degrees plus, the carbon within that material is moving all over the place pretty freely, especially the higher your temperature goes. And it eventually gets to the point where it doesn't stay just contained within the form of that bar, whatever shape it is. It will reach the surface and it will off-gas. And carbon depletion is a real thing to take into consideration. Now, there are ways to try to mitigate that, but the question here is, do you grind through, or so you get done forging, you get down to, it's time to clean up the bar. There's obviously the forge scale on the outside. Do you just clean that off, or do you clean deeper? Because what happens is there will also be a decarburized layer of steel underneath that forge scale. And that's just, that's that kind of margin or that zone where the carbon has left the material, and you do not need to grind through the decarb layer as well. As long as, at least in the consecutive rounds following, you're giving the steel time for that, that material to the carbon within that material to even back out. You will see this sometimes in people's blades online or wherever, or even in bars of Damascus. You'll see these cloudy lines. And the steel is welded together, but what has happened is that it hasn't been given the time for that carbon to kind of redisperse throughout the material. It'll rehomogenize. It'll even back out. And so those cloudy lines you're seeing are carbon depleted areas. And so if you just give it a little bit more time, that carbon will, again, once you get up to those forging temperatures and forge welding temperatures, that carbon will kind of migrate and move around throughout the material freely, and it'll repopulate those decarburized areas, those cloudy line areas of your steel. But you got to give it time. And if you want to give it time, you know, you can turn that temperature down, and honestly, like, you can let it soak, or you can pull it out after you're done forging your bar, or you wrap it in foil and put it back in to give it time. But to give it that time, especially if you're going to do stock removal, which is totally fine and totally fair, but you got to give it that time to kind of that carbon to redistribute throughout that whole bar of steel. Otherwise, you are going to end up with those cloudy areas. Now, is that necessary? Is it going to be a bad thing if you don't? I will say, I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing, because the steel, again, is solidly welded together, but there is less carbon there, which means when you go through the heat treating process, those areas of depleted carbon are going to respond to the heat treatment process different than the areas that have the carbon. And so there might be areas along your blade where all of those weld boundaries are that are just a little bit softer or won't hold an edge as well. And again, this is something that's very easy to do, even if you just put it through an anneal cycle after you're done forging, which is a slow thing. You bring it up to a certain temperature, you do an isothermic hold, which means just holding it at that temperature, and then slowly let it step down. You got to use your even heat, program the shit in. There are charts all over the place. Knife engineering is a great resource for this. And by the time it's gone through that anneal process, that carbon has had time to redistribute. Just do that, and that will make a huge difference if you're worried about having carbon depleted areas or zones or regions in your finished bar of steel. You will see this a lot when people do like angle tiled mosaics, because they're trying to work the material, get it welded together as quickly as possible, because they're worried that the carbon is just going to like leach completely out of the steel. That's not, the carbon moves, but it's not actually moving that fast. But if you're spending all fucking day there, then you're going to be depleting the material quite a bit of its carbon content. But there's enough carbon in most steels that we're making Damascus from, that even after 4 or 5 rounds of forge welding processes and cutting and grinding and restacking and all this exposure to high temperatures and shit, there's still enough carbon within that material to make a hard high carbon steel knife a good working tool. Actually, you only need I think it's about 0.55% carbon. You know, people are talking, boasting all these high carbon contents of like 1% or more, or around 1%. 1084, for example, has 0.84% carbon by weight in the steel. So there's enough carbon in there that through these processes, there's still going to be enough carbon to make a good knife. But you do want to work in a timely manner, but you don't have to race through it. And a lot of these cloudy lines you see are from people racing through that forge welding process and not giving that steel the time it needs, or not putting it through a simple process like the normalizing process, so that carbon can kind of redistribute throughout the material. And so you do not have to grind through the decarb layer, but if you don't want those decarb lines to show up, then just give it a little bit of time at temperature and they will clean themselves out. They'll work themselves out. Is that a good answer? That help?
Yeah, that's a very good answer.
Jesus Christ.
Very good answer.
I just got back from
Sweden.
What
are you adding
again
to that, then, Jeff?
What to add? Sell your shit, Dennis. Get rid of it. It's all over. Get rid of your shit. Get another job. Find another hobby. Do something else. Yeah, it's over. It's over. Just forget it. It's enough.
There
find
we go.
Something
I think
else.
With that, we need an ad break. I can tell everybody about TexasFarrierSupply.com. Whether you're a knife maker, a farrier, a bladesmith, however you identify, get yourself over to TexasFarrierSupply.com, where you can get 10% off everything by using Knife Talk 10. And here's a tip. They sell Indasa Rhino Wet. We've already talked about hand sanding and making that easier. Rhino Wet's the stuff you need to be using. If you're not using it, you're really missing out on a trick. So head on over to TexasFarrierSupply.com, fill up that cart with Indasa Rhino Wet, get 10% off by using Knife Talk 10 at checkout. Right, where are we?
We have listener feedback, too. We could do a couple listener feedbacks. Fuck around
a little bit. Let's do a bit of that. Yes, a bit of feedback.
Guys, go follow us on Instagram. Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. You can DM us your questions, your listener feedback, all the stuff you want, whatever you want, however you want it. I'm with you. This first one comes from Plumlee Knives. He says, I wanted to take a moment to extend my deepest gratitude to Jeff for all the incredible work you put into this podcast. I didn't...
You had to pick that one, didn't you?
It was the first fucking one.
He has a week
one.
Off and he comes back.
The first
oh,
one. Jesus I got a complaint Christ. For you if you want that one, but this is the first one. Your passion for knife making... All right, it's okay. You two guys primed the pump for him to write something nice. Keep up the fantastic work. We're looking... He wrote a lot of nice things about me.
Let's hear
and
it.
then my That's okay. Don't worry. I read it. It's good enough.
No, let's hear it.
Come on.
I'm not reading the whole thing. I mean, it's very nice. You said a very nice thing. And then I responded to him by saying, yeah, fuck those two other guys. That was what I said. So thank you very much, my guy. Plumlee Knives, a good dude. Randy Reichart says, repeat customers are great, are they not? But how great is it when every time they do come back, they assume you'll give them the old friends and family discount or an even bigger deal on a knife? This happens when I already know I'm selling myself short on the work. Also, I do get my work, quote, out there when the majority of my work gets scooped up almost immediately and is owned by just a handful of these repeat customers. It's kind of the repeat customer conundrum. And this dovetails back to what we were talking about in terms of repeat business is... You know, it's not all high fives and lightning bolts. What was the expression? High fives and what was my
high
old...
fives and hand jobs.
No hand jobs. High fives and whatever. But I mean, it is interesting because we still usually get. Sometimes you'll get a customer. Like I get customers who they never hawk me in Chinik for a deal. I got some guys who are just like I got like a group of 10 dudes who are like. They come in, they buy, they don't ask, and I usually will throw stuff in as thanks and write some notes and stuff.
What did you say?
But once in a while,
what?
It's a Yiddish expression, "hock me in Chinik." My dad used to say when I was younger and we would walk through a store, I'd say, "Dad,
somebody
can I have that?" Dad, can I have that? And he goes, "Ah, you're always hocking me in Chinik." It's a Yiddish expression for stop asking for stuff all the time.
Gotcha.
Hocking me in Chinik. It's a fucking good one. I use that shit all the time. Don't hock me in Chinik. Okay. So, so there are some people who they just can't help themselves. And they'll say stuff like, can you give me the friends and family? I know, Craig, you get jerked around by some of your family members, right? Don't you have some?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not literally.
Please, I mean, yeah.
Just like the...
I'm not from Utah.
14-year-old. Yeah, that's right. But, I mean, it's true. I mean, you do get... Once in a while, you get somebody. I mean, the funny thing is in my mind, I think to myself, why are you asking me this? But then part of me is just like, you know what? Sometimes, you know, the open mouth, the mouth that's open gets fed. You know, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know, if you don't ask, what's the hurt in asking? So I understand it. Well, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I've seen makers do that. I have friends that actually, that with their knife, they'll send like a little kind of thank you coupon in a way. And I never understood it. Because it's like you go buy an Hermes bag for your wife or something like that. They're not giving you no fucking discount because you come back and get her a clutch as well or some other shit, you know.
Well, most of these motherfuckers ain't Hermes. So it's like, I mean, let's step down a hair. I mean, some of these guys are barely Wawa. You know what I'm saying? I mean, these motherfuckers are like, some of this is some Kmart shit here.
I ain't no
Hermes and listen to this podcast. So I'll tell you that the fucking Lord Hermes is not like, oh, I should think about getting a coupon code for my scarves. I don't think so.
It is something you sometimes see, particularly with mailing lists as well. You know, get on the mailing list and, you know, you'll be first in. We can give you a 10% promo code or something like that. It's quite common to see. So I suppose that's a way of looking after your current customers, giving them a discount. I'd never be the one to say to somebody, could I get a discount on that? You know,
that's their thing.
It is exactly, sure. Yeah, you're right. And yeah, God bless them, but it's not me. And well, fuck them.
I'm trying to think if I ever said, can you help me out? When I go over get my liquid nitrogen, I used to be like, hey, can you help me out the last time? Can you help me out this time? But at the same time, I'm like, I'm not, you know, that ain't Hermes. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, it's like, you know, I still think that we as knife makers, custom knife makers, have put ourselves on this high position where we think that everything we make, we should get every single nickel squeezed out, even if we're charging for some of our R&D, which is annoying. It annoys me when I hear people charging for the R&D to do the work. That annoys the shit out of me. But
you're talking about like the emails back and forth and...
No. I'm talking about like, I want you to make, you know, somebody says, I want you to make something. I want you to make this. And then you're just like, I know this is going to be hard, but then I'm going to like, you know, add on for this, add on for that. And all of a sudden it's just like, well, it just took me so much longer to do. And I'm going to add on more. You know, you come up with a price, the fair price. And then, you know, your customer shouldn't have to pay for your inexperience. Because there are a lot of guys who are charging for experience that they don't have. I think that we should also, I think some of us should look at this more like a business of, you know, we got to keep the lights on. You know, this isn't like, I'm not shining up the brass knobs on my yacht here. you got to keep the ball rolling and we can't be so sentimental. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm
starting to rethink my. I have one friend in particular I'm thinking of that does like the little coupon things, and I think he has like a referral program kind of in a way, and he doesn't really advertise it. But when he sends his knives out, I think he does somehow let his customer know, oh, if anybody comes my way via you, I'll send you a little coupon. And it's like, it's not a 10% or 5%, it's just like a solid whatever, $100 off your next purchase or something, for like whether it's fucking apparel or a wooden spoon or who knows whatever that they can use, or either for themselves or give as a gift to somebody else that they can use or whatever. But that's it's not just giving it to them, it's because that person has referred another client. And especially, and not just for the reference, but if like for a successful sale. So I think that's actually what his program was like a referral program in a way.
There's that thing, isn't it, of, you know, how much it requires to get a new customer, how much it costs to acquire a new customer. Sure. So if you could make a saving by giving a current customer a discount, it sort of makes business sense.
Yeah.
But I just think it's, I think it's a bit of a slippery slope though, I think, because
if they ever come back to you, they're going to want at least that again. You know, they're not going to go back to a regular price once they've had a discount. And I think it just opens the doors to more discount.
You can say no.
You can say no, but it's just something.
Work for it.
It's okay. Interesting because we have about 10 customers who are just like monsters. And they'll keep buying stuff to the point where I'm turning to AZ and I'm just like, what is wrong with this guy? We should call the police. I don't know, something wrong here. I don't understand it. Like, it's just like they keep buying this shit, you know?
And then he cuts a tomato once and he's like, all right, I need another knife.
No, but I mean, I literally, legitimately, I'm like, sometimes we'll get of the same goddamn name and I'm shaking my head like this. And I'm joking, obviously. But right. I'll throw a little bottle opener or something we have, or I'll throw something in and just being like, you know, I really appreciate you. And it means a lot. And you can, I have a guy who I've known forever. I've known before. I was a chef. He's a friend of mine. I've known him forever. And he's always hawking me in Shinik for a discount. And I'll be like, all right, I'll knock it off a little bit here, knock it off a little bit there. And then I've known him for a long time. He's a friend. And, you know, the funny part is sometimes, you know, he'll give me a deposit and then I got to hunt him down to get paid. And I'm just like, so I just like, I have a text I'll send him every day. What's going on? What's going on? But at the same time, it's like, you know, there are certain people you're just like, yeah, I got to take care of this guy. He was, you know, always good to me back in the day. Or, you know, I feel as though we get a little bit, what's the forest for the trees? Is that expression, forest for the trees? You got to look at the long term. You don't worry. Don't worry so much about all this stuff. And sometimes discounts are good. We've been doing every so often. Allison will say to Tony, "Well, maybe we should do a discount just because we need to raise some money we got a photographer coming and we have this all this shit we're doing." And you know, we did a discount and it was a nice little pop and it was stuff we had in stock. And I sharpened it, shipped it out, and you know, it's we got to keep the fire going. So.
Totally. But rather than give discounts, another way to save money is just to buy things cheaper. And if you go to maritimeknifesupply.com, for every 10 belts you get discounted 10% off a 10-pack, basically. With no code needed, they've got everything you possibly need there, as well as belts. They've got steel, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. Lawrence is a really good dude. Anything we mention on the show, he really tries hard to get them in stock. So go take a look at maritimeknifesupply.com. They're Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. Go take a look. Give them a follow. And I know he's still got not many bars left of the Dharma Steel Chef Invitational Build-Along Steel that we're doing. So if you don't know about that, Dharma Steel we've worked with for quite some time now. They make the best Damascus-style stainless. Super, super easy to use. And we do this great thing with them each year where they have a bit of a competition and we have, you know, various categories and so on. And they pick these beautiful, beautiful knives. But we're doing a build-along again this year. So you can head on over to Maritime Knife Supply and buy one of these pieces. Everybody gets the same piece. And we do a build-along. And there'll be a bit of a prize for the winner who does the build-along. So, yeah. Take a look at dharmasteel.se. They've got all these sort of the secret sauce ingredients there of how to use Dharma Steel as well. Super, super easy. They make it easy for everybody. And if you want to make a beautiful piece, Dharma Steel is the stuff to use. So yeah, dharmasteel.se. Take a look at those guys. And Dharmasteel AB on Instagram. And they do a really good job of sort of showing some of the great stuff people are making with Dharma Steel. So go follow them as well. Dharmasteel AB on Instagram.
Do we know when the Dharma Steel Invitational is?
November, I believe. Okay. I believe it's November. Yeah. So yeah, maybe 7 or 8 weeks left. Right. Yeah.
Make it. Let's fuck around.
Shall we call it a day and do a bit of an after show?
Yes. Do it.
Okay. Not that it makes a difference, but I think we all give a sort of collective once we hear this.
I love that shit. So I wanted to talk to you guys about something because we were talking about what we watch and stuff like that. And my wife and I, this now is the U.S. Open is on. And the U.S. Open is tennis in New York, in Queens, at the Arthur Ashe Stadium. And for me, as I grew up, this was the end of summer. You watch the U.S. Open. Like, my mother was a huge tennis person. She used to go to the U.S. Open. she would, you know, watch it. We would watch in the house. So we turned, we were in Sweden. We were in a hotel and we turned it on and we were watching the U.S. Open. Do you guys know what a honey deuce is? It's not that, I mean, it's not that.
A honey deuce.
Sounds like something that costs extra.
No.
I mean, it does cost extra. It's a drink. This is the most popular drink at the U.S. Open.
Oh, I saw and a post about that.
It's fucking amazing. And so it's vodka, lemonade, raspberry.
That's vodka's a loser's drink, though, isn't it?
No. Can I just finish the fucking story here? Jesus Christ,
sorry,
Lord Fauntleroy.
Hold
what you got. Let me just read the... So it's vodka, lemonade, raspberry liqueur. And then you fill it in a highball glass with rocks and lemonade. And then you use your melon scooper and you get some honeydew melons and you drop them. They look like tennis balls. So apparently they made $9 million at the U.S. Open between last year from the honey deuce drink. They're selling them for $23 a pop. So Hillary and I were just like, it looked great. It looks really good. The color's really nice. And then the two fucking melon balls on top. So Hillary and I got the stuff to make it, and we made it. God damn, that's a good ass drink. I mean, God damn it, is that a good ass drink? The honey deuce is a kick ass drink. Kick ass drink. And I threw a little bit of seltzer water in there, just kind of, I like a little seltzer water in there. But Jesus Christ, we've been watching we got big tonight's two semifinals matches. We're not going to have honey deuces because it's a weekday night, but we're gonna watch the U.S. Open. Fun.
Nice. I like watching tennis. It's a good one to watch. But we've been watching Outlast on Netflix. So occasionally me and my wife, we get into this. I think it's normally this time of the year as well. It gets a little bit colder and it gets darker earlier. And we end up watching like Alone and things like this, these survival shows. Yeah. But Outlast is basically Netflix version of Alone, but they do things in teams. So there's a bit of sort of a psychological thing going on as well. It's so good. So good. And we watch it as if we're like survival experts. We're like, yeah, I mean, we do that. You know, once we got a fire blazing and we got blankets on us and so on, you know. But it's brilliant. I love it. So, yeah, Outlast is back on Netflix for season two, and we're halfway through. It's really, really
I will
good.
Say, when Alone came to Netflix, I've watched the two, I think, two seasons so far that they've had, that they syndicated across.
Yeah.
And I liked it. I was like, oh, wow, this is actually very interesting.
I love it. Yeah, yeah. Cool.
So I'll have to check that out.
Really into
Although
it.
I do take your suggestions with a grain of salt. I feel like these days, next thing you know, it's like two fucking hairy dudes jerking each other off and trying to stay alive.
Hey, you have fucked a number of our listeners up. You have fucked a number of our listeners. Your suggestions are very questionable.
There was one. Reindeer
something or other.
Oh, there's baby reindeer. Oh, yeah. And what was the film with the bath sequence?
I don't. Of Salt Lick.
What was it called? Salt Burn. Oh, salt Burn.
Salt Lick.
Yes.
You know, you guys
salt
told lick me about
the bottom
that.
Of the tub.
You guys told me about that fucking shit, and then I told my wife told me the answer. I'm like, these motherfuckers are watching this wacko show. Forget it. Fuck that. No interest.
But no, Outlast is really good. It takes. Alone, and it adds an extra element to it.
I'll have to
so
check it
yes,
out.
It is nice.
Craig, did you say last week that there's something going on with Indasa and you in New Jersey? There is,
and we should have mentioned that as well, actually, because we're still live now. Listeners, Indasa are looking for the face of Indasa. basically, they want some promo materials of knife makers using Indasa. For things like posters and, you know, social stuff, all that kind of stuff. So if you are, if you're using Rhino, you should be, let's face it. You think you're up for it, send in a few, like, action shots of you using it. And we could be quite funny with this, I think, as well. We could be a bit cheeky.
Well, how would you do a picture on a podcast?
They can send them in to us, and we can put them on our socials
okay.
or whatever it is. I don't know. But, yeah, we'll probably do this next week because, we've had a chat with them, but we haven't really sort of finalized what we're going to do. But I think we could do something like this, and I think it could be quite funny too.
So yeah, so if you've got a bunch of Indasa Rhino wet there, which you should have, get your phone next time your hand sand in, get some action shots in for us. The funnier the better.
Oh my God.
And I'm sure they'd put up a prize on stuff as well. And you'd be the face of Indasa. You'd be in Times Square on a big billboard.
Yeah, Times Square. Funny, you know what? Not quite. Let's just say this. Funny is one thing, but if you want to be on the don't do like what our boy Brigham Kindel did, where he stuck the knife out of his zipper and had his toes out and saw that. Funny is funny and stuff like that.
Have a nut out in the background. But, or something. I mean,
Jesus
don't
Christ!
Yeah,
don't do. If you really want to do something, be serious about it. It might be nice for you, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, and Dasa, they're good dudes. They make great stuff. So send a picture of you, yeah. But make sure people can see you using the Rhino Wet. You know, don't like
exactly. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. Yeah, and I'll speak to them. We'll try and get some prize squared away as well. So yeah, it should be a nice thing to do. That'll be cool. But yeah, they're doing something in New Jersey, and I think Jeff, we're going to try and get you involved with it because it's quite local for you.
Yeah, if the timing works, I'll definitely be down there to say hello. Yeah, I'm not cool. going to. I mean, I don't need to be. You know, now you, just because I've been flown over to fucking Sweden doesn't mean I need to like be picked up by a limousine or anything. But I will be there, and you know, we'll have some fun.
But you wouldn't be mad about
any
it.
Of our sponsors.
I wouldn't be mad.
Any
about
of our sponsors.
It, no.
If you've got any sort of yeah. event, we'll just send Jeff.
If
now.
You
Jeff's our representative.
If you, you know, as they say, show me the money. I mean, I'm with you. I'm with Rhino Wet. They've been good. Listen, Indasa has been good sponsors to us. It'd be my pleasure to go down there and shake some hands and say hello.
Awesome.
We'll do the Rhino Wet. I'm going to bring Brian House. We're going to do the Rhino Wet 5K.
Where we have oh my God.
To wear like Rhino Wet running shorts.
Get some grit.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Rhino Wet running shorts. We're going to make Rhino Wet running shorts where the grit's on the inside and you got to run.
Oh, you have it on the.
Chafe
you
know, pants.
You got a knife in between your legs.
Yeah.
You know, standing we're gonna call the blade.
The Chafe Master 5000.
Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. And with that, I think maybe that's a show.
Much better
land
than
on the Chafe Master 5000. Thank you all for listening. We've had a really, really fun time, and we shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.